The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to today's edition of the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A, where we answer your questions with our answers, which sounds a little strange, but that's what we do here. So we take questions mostly via email from all around the country and even outside the borders of the good old United States. Take questions on all kinds of retirement-related topics, and we do our best at answering those questions here. Occasionally, we'll take a live call during these podcasts. It doesn't happen all that often because I think the beauty of podcasts is people can listen to them whenever they want, so they do so. We do stream this live as we're recording it every Tuesday afternoon, Mountain Time, at about 3 o'clock. And it is Mountain Time because we are in Northern Colorado, but we help people throughout the country. My name is Chris. I'm here with Jim, and in a little bit we're going to introduce a very special guest we've got on the show. First-timer on the show.
A newbie, and she's very nervous.
They always are.
Yeah. It's because we're very intimidating.
I think so. That must be it.
It is.
So I hear you've got your cough, your throat lozenge.
I haven't recorded my throat lozenge now.
For 2 weeks. So
I am much better, finally.
Your cough has abated?
It's abating. Okay. Good. It's not fully abated.
Okay. I like your preemptive throat lozenge, though. That's a good idea.
I was trying to beat the punch because the cough just comes and goes. It's got a mind of its own. But it is much, much better.
Excellent.
Whatever cold I caught, it was from hell. It just didn't go away. Just stood there.
I'm glad you're over it.
I am.
Or getting over it.
How was California with your students at the TD Ameritrade concert?
The conference and the students were excellent. The week in the 50-degree cloudy, drizzly weather of Southern California in early February was not as enjoyable as I'd hoped. I was hoping for 75 and sunny. But other than that, it was good.
Where were you, San Diego?
San Diego.
And it was 50 and cloudy and drizzly?
Mostly, yeah.
You don't really figure that kind of weather in San Diego.
No, and I heard it never rains in Southern California, but that's not true. It rained when we were there many times, actually.
Many times?
During the week, so.
I think it's their rainy season, and then it goes away.
2 years ago when I was there at the same conference, it was beautiful.
Was it?
Yeah, but I'll probably go again. San Diego's got some nice things even when it's raining. But
well, you have no choice to go. You have to bring your students, don't you?
I do. I could offload that duty to someone else if I had to, but an all-expense-paid few days in San Diego on TD Ameritrade's dime.
Worth it.
There could be worse things.
It could be.
Right? right? It's a nice conference.
For those who don't know, Chris teaches finance. He runs the financial planning department at Colorado State University. And every year he has to escort a couple of students to a big financial planning conference put on by TD Ameritrade.
That's one of a few we go to. Few, yeah. But we sometimes go to the Financial Planning Association conference
and
as well.
Did they let you go on their dime too?
No, we have to fund our own way on that one, but we do get to take more students. The TD Ameritrade is a little more exclusive, only two students, but TD is nice enough to pick up the tab for them. So
very good. And it's a great learning experience for the students.
It is. They get exposed to real live financial advisors and planners at the conference from all over the country, so a lot of internship and job opportunities arise there. And that's really why TD brings them out, actually, is there.
Good.
The advisors are going to be there, and the advisors are all begging for young, new talent. So they supply it in the form of about 65 to 80 students from around the country.
Excellent. So. Okay, enough small talk. We have a lot of Q's to get to. We have a lot of A's to give and a lot of Q's to get through. And we do have, as Chris said, a special guest who will become a regular part of the podcast. She doesn't know that yet. Does she know yet that I usually hit people with things just during the podcast?
Oh, by the way, there'll be random things you'll have to respond to.
I've kind of figured that out.
But she being Joe Madonna. Thank you. Joe Madonna is...
Were you about to say Montana?
I was going
like
to.
Like Hannah Montana?
Like Hannah Montana, yes. Okay. Or Joe Montana, the football player. That's
oh,
who I was
there
thinking
you go. Yeah,
I wasn't thinking of Hannah Montana.
That would be less offensive.
Yeah, Joe Montana. That I wasn't sure you were old enough to remember Joe.
Oh, I remember Joe Montana.
I was just kidding.
Oh, speaking of football, hold on.
You're old enough to probably have cheered for Joe Namath.
No, but for the last 20 years, I've been cheering for the New England Patriots and Thomas Brady, who won another Super Bowl. I don't know if you've noticed.
I hadn't heard that.
You hadn't heard that?
No.
Oh.
No.
But congratulations to my New England Patriots. A couple of iTunians wrote to me congratulatory emails, so I want to thank them as well.
Mm. Nice. Were they also from Massachusetts?
No, they're from all over. They just know I like the New England Patriots and have an incredibly meaningful man crush on Tom Brady.
Glad you can admit it.
Yeah, I freely admit it. Okay, so we have a bunch of questions to get to, but we also want to introduce a new member of the Retirement and IRA show. Her name is Jo...
Madonna.
Madonna, thank you.
We just went over this, Jim.
I know, but I'm bad with last names.
And I think you're just bad with names altogether.
I am pretty much bad with names. Jo is an enrolled agent. We'll have her explain a little bit about what an enrolled agent is. She has been working with our firm for several months now, and she's taken a more prominent position. She's going to be featured a lot on the radio to talk a lot about the tax implications of retirement. Chris and I talk a lot about your tax planning window, about how you have always taxable, maybe taxable, never taxable accounts, and how you really need to pay attention to how you are saving. We call it tax diversification. And there's all different rules on how distributions are going to affect Medicare premium surcharges, Social Security taxation. So many people pay attention to the marginal rate they're in, but they're ignoring the effective rate, the rate of taxes on the next dollar of income, and how all these different exemptions and loss deductions and how Social Security is taxed and capital gains are taxed. You might be in the 24% marginal rate, but you could have an effective rate in the 30s, 40s, and even higher. We see that all the time. A lot of the software that we use to help clients project this shows us their marginal rate and their effective rate, which is the taxation of the very next dollar of income you're going to get. And you can be in a low bracket and have a very high effective rate.
Yeah, and just to clarify that, and we'll get to you, Jo, in a second, I promise. She's waiting very patiently.
She's no patient.
Jim tends to talk a lot on the podcast.
You're talking now, not me.
True.
Go on with what you were going to say.
But what I was going to say is I totally understand what Jim is saying. He's because I know
it wrong?
The lingo. No.
Oh.
You're using a non-traditional definition of marginal tax rates.
Ah.
So technically the marginal tax rate is in fact the tax on the next dollar that you earn. It's at the margin, the very next dollar. What Jim is describing is that there's other tax effects beyond just the core clean income tax that's part of your marginal tax bracket, there are other tax effects in the form of lost deductions, ACA issues. You listed a couple others.
Premium tax. That's ACA. Yeah, yeah. I wanted the you ACD. To define what ACA is okay. for those who didn't know.
The Affordable Care Act credits. So there's, think of it as ramifications to earning that next dollar beyond just the very simple income tax ramifications. There's grander tax ramifications than that, which Jim's describing as effective rates. So it's a non-traditional usage of those terms, and I'm only saying that because I know there's a lot of there's actually a lot of professionals that listen to our show who are a little more hip to the lingo, as they say, on the streets in the 1980s. I'm showing my age there. But just wanted to make sure everyone understood. We know what marginal tax rates, what the marginal tax means. What Jim is talking about is those extraneous effects to earning that next dollar. You really have to look at the whole picture, and what we call and what he's calling your effective tax rate or effective tax burden, we capture those things with it.
Perfect.
Did that
And because sense? Of all that, we wanted to hire at the firm a tax expert. I bumped into Joe. I had the pleasure of meeting her several months ago. We struck up a very good friendship. And she has come on in a limited basis, but she is coming on and assisting our firm, and we're very happy to have her here. So, Joe, I want to welcome you to the podcast, which you probably didn't know was part of the job description. I think I left that out. And how do you feel?
I feel fine. Yeah,
so
a little nervous, but other than that, yeah.
You're doing fine.
As long as it's about taxes, I'm okay because that information I can handle.
Well, why don't you first start, just so people get to know you a little bit, give us just a little background. We don't need your whole life history necessarily, but a little background, and maybe describe what an enrolled agent is and kind of why you decided to become such a person.
I still don't know why I'm such a person. Some days are better than others when I talk to the IRS. I'm really happy and thankful to be here and assisting people and answering tax questions. This is really my passion. I'm from Northern Colorado. And
you're a native?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've been here my entire life, aside from a few years of college in Wyoming. But yes, I'm a native. So I decided to come back after college and had children and didn't go back to school for my accounting degree until later on after I had my second kiddo. And at that point, I had been doing bookkeeping and accounting services for some hospitality places around locally. And I thought, oh, this is kind of good. And to earn some extra income, I decided to do taxes on the side, and it ended up being something I really was passionate about. And I decided to really get into the representation because I found out that, you know, there's a lot of taxpayers out there who need help fighting the IRS because the IRS is wrong a lot of the time, and they will send out notices and people will just pay it. They'll pay it or they won't say anything. They'll put it in a pile on the side and just not, you know, deal with it. And then later on they find out they've got a lot of problems and they need a lot of help, and I found out that I really like to bicker with the IRS. So that's really my specialization. And then it just sparked from all of that first accounting to tax. And I really have a passion for it. So
nice. Well, that I can say. I've seen you interact with some of the clients in the office, and you definitely do have a passion for taxation that Chris and I do not have. We have some of the knowledge. We just don't have a passion for it as you do. Okay, so let's get into a couple of tax questions or tax-related questions, and then we'll proceed from there. How's that?
That sounds perfect.
Okay, the first one is from a listener in New Jersey, and they begin.
Oh, we need to let Joe know. We refer to everyone on the show as George.
Yes.
Oh.
That was...
Okay.
Well, this little clip will explain why.
Okay.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
So Jim has a fascination with 1970s and 80s Looney Tunes.
Mostly 70s, 60s right. and 70s. Right.
So do my kids, actually.
Yeah.
Oh.
So.
Oh, yeah.
You may have heard that.
Looney
so we
Tunes
decided,
is still around?
Well, no, you can get it on YouTube. And yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we decided years ago when we started doing this on the radio, the old-fashioned version of the podcast, that just to protect everyone's anonymity, we would call everyone George because
George.
Jim really liked that little Looney Tunes clip there. So,
do you remember that clip?
No, I don't.
That's the Yeti. That's the Yeti.
The Abominable Snowman.
Oh, okay.
A word not in.
Mm-hmm.
Not in my vernacular.
Yeah.
But that is when Bugs Bunny was trying to make it to Maui, but somehow he ended up in the Himalayas with Daffy Duck. And the Yeti wanted a rabbit of his very own. And that was the whole premise, mm-hmm. where Bugs Bunny tricked the Yeti into thinking Daffy Duck was a bunny.
Right. Put ears on him, and he decided to keep him as a pet and call him George. Anyway, back to the Retirement and IRA show.
Clearly, she hasn't seen that
one. So George from New Jersey has a question.
Actually, it's a Georgette from New Jersey.
Georgette or George.
And she begins, obviously, she's a brilliant person because she begins, Dear Chris.
Oh, nice.
She does put you first, but she quickly follows. And Tom Brady, George Clooney look alike. So clearly, she has been to our website. She's seen the photos.
Mm-hmm.
She's done the challenge. Mm-hmm. And she realizes I do look like George Clooney and or Tom Brady.
Okay.
Okay. So, Dear Chris and Tom Brady / George Clooney look alike. I have a question about my Social Security 1099 Social Security benefit statements. I lost both my father and my mother in 2018. I'm in the process of helping my mom, my mother-in-law, excuse me, not my mother. I'm in the process of helping my mom with her taxes. She lost her mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. With her taxes and my husband, the executor of my mother-in-law's estate. But we haven't received statements for their Social Security benefits yet. Is the Social Security Administration late in sending them out because of the government shutdown? Should I be worried and contacting the administration to send duplicate statements? I wanted to answer this one sooner rather than later because we're in the middle of tax season. Mm-hmm. And what do you say, Joe, to someone who is missing a 1099 from the Social Security Administration?
Well, I would say right now it's, you know, the beginning of February. It's a little bit early to be panicking. They do send out a statement. It's called the 1099 SSA. So she should be getting a statement, but they send them out at the end of January. So it could be that it's taking just a couple weeks to get to her. I've seen it come as late as the last week of February for people. But in all, she should be expecting it. If she doesn't get it, then she should be contacting either, you know, the Social Security Administration or contacting the local office that helps with that. She can also, I don't know, is it her mother-in-law that she's requesting, or she says she's helping her mother with her taxes?
She lost her father and her mother-in-law.
Okay.
She's helping her mother with her taxes.
Okay.
And her husband is the executor of the deceased woman's estate.
So really, she probably doesn't have access to the online My Social Security account for either one. So it probably would be best if she doesn't receive it within the next few weeks to go ahead and contact someone and say, am I getting this or where did it go? But
and
they do send one
out. She mentioned the shutdown. I'm not aware that that has delayed anything necessarily. Social Security was still cranking things out during the shutdown. So, and I know people who have received their 1099 SSAs already.
Yeah.
Not that everyone receives them at the same time, because guess what? There's a lot of them that go out. So it's kind of spread out when people receive them. I wouldn't, like Joe said, I say it's not panic time yet. But if you don't see it here pretty soon, then you can go. And first of all, someone should have been in contact with the Social Security Administration to report the passing of the father and the mother-in-law in the story. So, and the husband being the executor should have the paperwork where they could go to the Social Security Administration and request a copy of the 1099 for his deceased. I'm missing the relationships here, but the father and mother-in-law. So.
Well, and the other thing people don't realize is it's not like people are actually there mailing things out. It's literally a computer system that generates a lot of this information and sends it out electronically. So the government shutdown really shouldn't have had much effect on it, if any at all. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that was the first question. Mm-hmm. Then we have another question.
That's tax related?
It is the last tax related. I want to get the tax ones done so Joe can move on.
Move on to do other more productive things?
Yes. And that way she doesn't have to sit here nervous. For her first time, she's doing pretty good.
Totally fine.
I think so.
Well, thank you.
One of the best tax guests we've ever had.
Absolutely. I think he's the only tax
guest. I was
going to
say only one.
I wasn't going to point that out, Jim.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. And this one is from a gentleman who, of course, again, we are going to call
George.
It. See? I just gave his real name. You're going to have to bleep that out.
Okay. Let me write that down.
Well, okay, here's this. We'll just say his real name, but I won't say the state he's from, so no one can track him down.
That's fine.
Okay. Wow, that's the first time ever I blurted out someone's real name.
Maybe.
I've done it before?
I believe you did it once, years ago. It's not a common occurrence.
Okay. All right. Well, he begins. I have a rental property, and I'm not going to say what state he's from. I have a rental property that I have owned for several years. I might be able to get a special deduction this year with the new tax laws. Is that true? Is there any added deduction or new tax law that will give me an extra deduction? And that's what I brought you on board for, because I think I have an idea what this guy's talking about, but I thought it only applied to businesses. And I thought I would bring you on to maybe clear the air on, I think, what is known as 199A.
Yeah, 199A. So this is actually one that stumped tax professionals, too. They've been asking the IRS for clarification on this one ever since they passed the tax law. And essentially what he's referring to is the QBI deduction. It's called Qualified Business Deduction. And it's a 20% deduction that some people are allowed if they have business entities. And because a lot of people consider their rental income as a business activity, this is a really good question. So the IRS has come out and they've said essentially that if you have one rental property and it's an investment, then you shouldn't take the qualified business income deduction. The 20% deduction does not apply for you. But if you have multiple properties that you're managing and you're managing them yourself, and they may happen to be in an LLC or something of that nature, then yes, you do get this 20% deduction. So I guess for this listener, it might just depend on, it looks like he might just have one rental.
He said he had just one. So yeah. You have to have more than one?
So they did not provide super great clarification on this.
What if it's one multifamily apartment?
Yeah, and I would say if he manages it, then yes, he should take that. But they're basically going to rely on case law for this, and at this time there isn't any case law because this is so new. So at this point, if you have a multifamily unit, I would say yeah, if you manage it. If you have maybe a property manager managing it, maybe you ought to think twice about whether or not you should be claiming that deduction. But if you manage it and you do all the work relating to it and you consider it a business, then yes, you should claim it. But if you have just, one side Airbnb rental or, you know, something that you've had for a couple years that you rent out, then I would say no, do not claim that, because they're probably going to come back and say, no, you can't claim the QBI for that.
Okay. And there are a lot of rules, exemptions, and other issues with this 199A deduction that we won't get into on this answer, but we want to acknowledge to people there are a lot of rules you have to follow to get this deduction.
Yeah.
Income limits, type of employment that you're talking. So it's not quick and easy, but if you qualify, and apparently if you own your own rentals, you will qualify if you have multiple rentals, if I'm following you correctly. And you're doing the managing yourself. So that means if you have multiple rentals but hire a management company and pay them, kind of outsourcing or hiring someone, like I have employees here, they're not going to consider that a business now. You have to be the one going out at 3 a.m. unclogging a toilet. You can't hire someone to do that.
Right. They've said that is okay to have a property manager managing it, but it's dependent on how many hours that you're contributing to
Gotcha.
To doing the business. Like if you're only putting in, you know, a couple hours for the year in actually managing them, then they're going to say no. But if the managing company is maybe just bringing in income and making phone calls for you, but you're doing the rest and you're, you know, going out and making fixes and doing all the bookkeeping related to it, then yeah, you have that opportunity to take it as a qualified business income.
Okay. Point is, listen, to talk to your tax professional. But there could be, well, in his case, with one rental, it's pretty much no.
No, I wouldn't recommend it. If someone has one rental or say they have like a triple net lease, which if you don't know what a triple net lease is, you know, essentially you don't do anything. The tenant pays the utilities, they pay the real estate taxes, they take care of everything. If you have a triple net lease, then I would say probably best just not to apply for the QBI because they're probably going to say no because you don't do anything.
Right.
Okay. Fair enough to me. Any follow-ups on that?
No, it sounds to me like it just comes down to if you're treating it and running it like a legitimate business, you're probably in the clear. But if it's treated more like an investment and a business are two different things.
Yeah.
So there's certain things that are treated as investments and investment income taxed as such. Then there's businesses that have expenses that are legitimately for the business. And hopefully you'll fall cleanly into one of those two camps, make this easy. There's going to be a lot of people right on that borderline that are going to be have a little trouble, and we don't have a ton of clarity yet on.
No, and they won't. They probably won't be providing much clarity, to be honest, right. Not until someone actually goes to court and fights
someone
it.
Has to step over the line in order for them to tell us where the line is.
Pretty much, yes.
One of those kind of deals.
Yes.
We have to pass the law to see what's in the law.
Pretty much.
Kind of. That's similar.
Very famous from Nancy Pelosi there on the ACA.
I think we're still trying to figure
bill,
out what's in
said.
There.
Pass the bill to see what's in there. Okay. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
We will bring you on again. I think she did well.
She did fine from our standpoint.
I'll give her a D minus.
Didn't...
Ouch.
Well, I'm not going to grade that high. He gets a C plus.
Oh, so I'm getting close to you. Close. We're doing pretty good today.
But you did very well, Joe. We will bring you back on. If anybody has tax questions, now that we do have Joe and it is tax season, she would be more than happy, maybe not necessarily more than happy, but she will come on if I ask her to come on to the podcast and record answers to your tax questions. So in addition to Social Security questions, retirement questions, IRA questions, don't hesitate to ask tax questions. You can, again, go to our website, Jim Helps. That's JimHelps.com. JimHelps.com. Click on the Contact Us button. You can send us a question right through that. Or if you want to send it to us direct, just email Jim@JimHelps.com. That's Jim@JimHelps.com. And send us the question. If it's a tax-related one, we will bring the lovely Joe back on, and she will answer your tax questions. Sound fair, Joe?
Excellent.
Perfect. Perfect. Anything else you want to add?
No, nope, that's it. Just make sure to switch off your mic on the way out. Close the door on your way out.
There you go. Underneath. Perfect. All right. When she leaves, we'll talk stuff about her.
Okay. Right. That's what I was planning on anyway.
Okay. This email, Chris, comes from a listener in the fine state, and it's really warm this time of year there, Wisconsin.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It's beautiful. It's balmy. Mm-hmm. It's going to make your San Diego trip in the 50s look like hell. You should have went to Wisconsin for the winter.
Should have gone to Wisconsin.
Yes. Okay, so he writes to us, in your last Q&A podcast, and this comes from a month ago, so it really wasn't our last. In your last Q&A podcast, you discussed the rule of 55. It sounded like the assumption was that the 401k had pre-tax funds. Are there any different or additional rules if a person was to withdraw post-tax funds from a Roth 401k? Does the Roth 401k need to be open for 5 years? Do contributions have to simmer for 5 years? Love the show, George from Wisconsin. And I changed his name to George from his real name.
That's good.
Okay, so I remember that show. We did talk about what the special rule, he calls it rule of 55. But if you separate from service in the year you turn 55.
Or later.
You don't have to be 55. You can be 54. But separating from service, which is another way of saying retiring, leaving your current job.
Or fired,
one or the other. If you leave that employment in the year you turn 55, you could still be 54. You could be like me. My birthday's in July. But if I was to retire or leave or get fired in January, I still have 6 more months before I turn 55. I'm only 54 and a half at that point. But because I left in the year I turned 55, I can take money out of that employer's 401k. Not a previous employer's 401k, not an IRA, but that employer's 401k and avoid the 10% early withdrawal penalty. Because everyone should know if you take money out of a 401k younger than age 59 and a half, not only is there income taxes, there is a 10% early withdrawal penalty, the IRS calls it, on the gross distribution. But they waive that 10% penalty if you take it out in the year you turn 55 or later and only from that employer's 401k. Now, that's the setup. We were talking specifically, Chris, about pre-tax 401ks. We were not talking about post-tax Roth 401ks. So he wanted to know, is there a special rule that he would have to follow? Is there a five-year rule that's going to impact his abilities to get money out of the Roth and not pay the 10% early withdrawal penalty? Yes and no. I think there is a five-year rule that applies to 401ks. I don't want to downplay that. A 401k, in order to get a qualified distribution, but that's not what we're talking here, Chris, but let's explain what a qualified distribution is. A qualified distribution is a distribution that, quote-unquote, qualifies for special tax treatment. And from a Roth, that means it's tax-free.
Right.
Now, in order for a distribution to be qualified and therefore tax-free, and that's the removal of growth, the money you put into a Roth can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. Now, that's in a Roth IRA. In a Roth 401k, the pro rata rule actually applies, and you cannot specify I'm taking out just my contributions.
Right. The distribution order is different.
In a Roth 401k.
People might wonder, why does it not affect an IRA? Because they've declared that money removed from the IRA comes out in a specific order out of your control. And that specific order for a Roth IRA is the first thing that comes out, contributions.
But he's going down a little bit of a rabbit hole because we're talking, he being the listener, we're talking about an exemption from the 10% early withdrawal penalty, not the five-year rule on the taxation of a qualified distribution. But I want to explain that a 401k does have a special five-year rule for a qualified distribution. So the qualified distribution five-year rule is, if you open up a Roth 401k and take money out of it before the five-year holding period has been satisfied, income taxes will be owed. There will be taxes owed on the earnings.
The growth, right.
Not on your money.
Because you already paid tax on that.
But you can't specify in a Roth, I'm taking out just my money like you can in an IRA. So you do have to pay a little bit of attention to the five-year rule here.
So that's kind of that, what he was talking about, that simmer in there.
That's what he's saying,
stay
simmer.
In there, that five, does he have to be worried about that five-year issue?
Correct. But you are not going to have to worry about the 10% early withdrawal penalty, because that is waived, listener, whether you take it from a Roth or a non-Roth, because you're taking it out in the year or later of the year you turn 55. You're taking it out in the year you turn 55 or later. There is no more 10% penalty, so don't right. worry about that.
And that's what the 55 exemption, what you call the...
He called it the rule of 55.
The rule of 55. That age 55 exemption is for that penalty alone. It doesn't affect the tax ramifications. The tax ramifications of your distribution are separate, and it depends on whether it's a traditional 401k, which we've talked about on that previous show, or now the Roth 401k. It has to fall under the normal taxation rules of that account.
Exactly. But remember what I said, listener. If you're taking it from the Roth, the 10% early withdrawal penalty is not going to apply because that's what the rule of 55, as you worded it, is going to exempt you from. However, remember what I said, listener, you still must take out pro rata from a Roth 401k contributions and growth. And it is possible, Chris, that growth could be subject to taxes. The contributions won't. A return of your money is never taxable, but only in a Roth IRA can you restrict your distribution. In fact, you're not even restricting it. The first money out of a Roth IRA is always your contributions.
Only.
And your contributions are never subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty or to income taxes.
And correct me
but
if,
in a,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want me to keep talking? Or could you remember your question after?
Yes.
Okay. But in his case, it is possible. He didn't say how long he had his Roth 401k. If he had it for less than 5 years, he will owe income taxes on some of that distribution because it's not a qualified distribution, even though it's coming from a Roth. Nor can he just restrict his Roth distributions to only contributions, which would be tax-free, Chris, because in a Roth 401k, it comes out pro rata, contribution and growth, unlike an IRA where it's just contribution first. So what is the five-year rule for him to not have to pay taxes on the growth part of his Roth 401k distribution? The Roth 401k has to be open for 5 years and he must make the distribution after age 59 and a half, be disabled, or his beneficiaries are taking it out due to his death. Now, in this particular case, he's 55, so he would not have a qualified distribution. The qualified distribution is the Roth is open for 5 years and you are over 59 and a half, dead or disabled. So if he was to take, even though he's after age 55 or retiring in the year he turns 55, if he was to take that money, Chris, out of his Roth pot, not the traditional pot, but the Roth pot of his 401k, he would owe income taxes on the growth.
But only the growth.
But only the growth.
Instead of the full distribution.
There would be no 10%. No 10% early withdrawal penalty because that was ixnayed with the, because he's separating service in the year or later than the year he turns 55. In or after the year you turn 55. He satisfied that. No 10% penalty. No 10% penalty or taxes on his contribution. But the growth, which will be removed pro rata, if there's only 50% contribution and 50% growth, then 50% of that distribution will be subject to taxes. Mm-hmm. He has to be 59 and a half to get the growth out of the Roth 401k. And the Roth has tax-free, and the Roth has to be at least 5 years old or more.
Yep.
Now, that said, the whole thing is a moot point. Just restrict the distribution to the traditional 401k, and you won't have that problem.
Right, which he has to have, by the way. How do I know that?
Well, I would assume there's a traditional 401k here because employer matches can only go into the traditional.
Right. Now, he may have done something with that separately, but at some point he had money in a traditional 401k, because the employer piece cannot go into the Roth part. His contributions can. The employer piece cannot. It's always going to go into a traditional. I always like to point that out to people. Some people don't realize that
exactly
on the Roth 401k.
So in his case, I don't know if he has a relatively new Roth 401k, and that's why he's worried about this. But if the Roth is at the Roth 401k is at least 5 years old, that's good. But you cannot exempt from income taxes. You'll exempt yourself from the 10% penalty, but not income taxes. Now, that said, Chris, 100% of the distribution from the traditional 401k will be subject to income taxes.
No matter how old he is when
exactly.
he takes it.
So at least in the Roth part, if he didn't want to restrict his distribution to just traditional, or there wasn't enough money in the traditional, from the Roth, it's going to be pro rata. Could be 10%, 15, 30, 70, 100, I don't know.
But it's a tax he could avoid by waiting to 59 and a
Correct.
Half.
Correct. That's why
That's
I'm saying
point.
He could.
You definitely want to try to do that. Otherwise, you're kind of undermining the whole point of putting money in the Roth 401k in the first place.
Exactly.
You want to get all that growth out tax-free.
And the Roth should be the last asset you debit, in our opinion. It should definitely be the last asset that you debit from your from your retirement structure to begin with. So I would definitely encourage him to wait until he's 59 and a half, because you want that money to sit in that Roth, Chris, and stew and grow tax-free. And if he's retiring at 55, he could live a very long time. He could live another 30, 40 years, Chris, and you can get some good compounded tax-free growth. So,
exactly.
Anyways, good question. Something that we hadn't talked about. Gets a little bit confusing because of the whole pro rata rule with Roth accounts and how that pro rata rule does not apply to Roth IRAs. And that confuses people. Okay.
So, unfortunately, we have someone who would like to speak to us live, but due to a hardware limitation today, we can't take the call.
Ah.
So, we can call them back off air or
what happened
talk to them
to,
next week.
Hardware?
It's over there on my desk.
And it needs to be plugged in over here?
And it's, yeah.
Okay.
That, and it wasn't working quite right before. It was a little garbled. So I was addressing that issue as well.
So we can call this person back next week, could we
Absolutely.
Not?
Absolutely. We could expand on this next week.
Is Laura going to say that to him?
Yes.
Okay.
She's off to tell this person right now. They might be hearing it from us first, but so we apologize. Today, can't take a live call.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry, listener. We do thank you for having a live call. We will take your live call next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll call you.
Yeah, or if it's more urgent, they need to know the answer sooner, we can just let them know.
Here's another question. We'll keep rolling right along. This one's from a California listener. I wonder if they're from San Diego also bitching like you were about it being cold and rainy.
The locals were complaining.
Were they?
They were cold.
Yeah.
It was because it was like about 45 at night and 55 during the day and cloudy. They were freezing up there. They got their parkas on and everything.
Wow.
I was still wearing shorts, but...
Okay. Excuse me. So this begins, in 2018, I received $21,000 in retroactive Social Security benefits for 2017. And why don't I stop there and you explain what retroactive Social Security benefits are before people start saying, oh my God, I can get 21 grand from Social Security?
There's a couple reasons you can suddenly get a lump sum of retroactive benefits. If they owed you benefits but for some reason didn't pay you properly and you fought them and pointed out, hey, you should have paid me this and you withheld them for the wrong reasons or didn't pay me, but see, I'm right, and they finally come around to your point of view, they will make it right by just sending you a check, usually an electronic deposit, for the lump sum total of all the benefits that you missed out on. This happens a lot, actually, to people claiming Social Security disability. Social Security disability, which we don't talk about a whole lot on the show, but can have huge amounts of retroactive benefits paid, because oftentimes it takes a couple of years. You could span 3 year periods of back benefits that you were owed. You were denied initially, but then through the adjudication process, you win.
Ooh, big word.
They will pay you all of that in a big lump sum, but they'll attribute it to the years in which they'll point out, okay, back in 2015, we owed you this and didn't pay it, 2016, so it can be a huge amount. Now, this is not that much. This is $21,000, could have been from maybe 6-7 months worth of benefits that they claimed received retroactively, and it was for a previous year.
But there's another way you can get retro benefits, too.
You can. You can file for your own Social Security retirement benefits and ask that they backdate your application. This only works past your full retirement age, so not everybody can do this, but you can ask for the benefits paid back to you back 6 months or back to your full retirement age month, whatever is shorter, and they will send those to you as a lump sum. And that 6 month backdating might push it back into a previous year, per se. So there's a few ways. The point is there's a few ways you could get these lump sum retroactive benefits. So he received 21,000 of those for 2018. Is that where you were in the question?
Yes. He began with, in 2018, last year,
yep,
he received 21,000 in retroactive Social Security benefits for 2017. So I'm guessing they were taxed to him in 2017, but he received them in 2018.
That's not typically how it works, actually. When they send it to you, they will tell you what years you were paid for, but the 1099 you get will be for the year you received the benefits. They do that so that you don't have to go back and file an amended tax return.
Okay, I'm wondering in that case if that's what happened here or not, because let me finish the rest of the question, because it has to do with Irma.
Yeah.
So then he writes, this increased my Irma. And for those who don't know what Irma is, let me interrupt myself again. Irma stands for Income-Related Monthly Adjusted Amount, I-R-M-A-A, Irma. That is essentially an English means testing of Medicare premiums. If you earn too much money, the government is going to raise your Medicare premiums. And they call the whole process IRMA, Income-Related Monthly Adjusted Amount. And it's based on your taxes from 2 years previous. So follow the math that he's laying out here. In 2018, I received $21,000 in retro benefits, retroactive benefits for Social Security in 2017. Which increased my IRMA adjustment for Medicare. My question is, when can I ask for a reduction in my IRMA adjustment? And folks, when he's asking, saying IRMA adjustment, he's saying, when can I ask for a reduction in my Medicare premium surcharges? Because that's what he is. He's paying more for Medicare premiums because he received this $21,000. So again, when can I ask for a reduction in my IRMA adjustment on the basis that my 2019 modified adjusted gross income without this retroactive Social Security payment will be $21,000 less, and therefore he's not going to be subject to IRMA? So he's asking, when can he stop paying?
Now, he's describing something that I'm not sure is actually happening. He's implying that he's already gotten notification of the IRMA increase. I don't think that's true.
That's how I interpreted it.
Yeah, and I don't think that's true, because that $21,000 he received in 2018, he would have gotten as a 2018 1099, which the 2018 income won't be effective for IRMA calculations until January of 2020.
See, now that's what I thought too.
They will send you the 1099 and indicate in the notes box how much of the lump sum they sent you was attributable to 2017, 2018, all that kind of stuff. But it pushes you up. You are considered for tax purposes as having received it in 2018, even though it was for 2017.
So let's walk our listeners through how this works.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And I wasn't sure, because when you do the math, 2017, which gets filed in 2018, which gets applied in 2019, I thought, okay, that's what he means here. When he mentioned his 2019 modified adjusted amount, that his premiums this year have gone up. You're saying he's doing the math
and assuming,
and he sees
that it's coming, which will come next year, because you see how he said 2018 is 21,000 higher than what he expects to be in 2019. So he's recognizing at that point that that extra 21 grand has been piled up into 2018, pushing him above the IRMA limit for 2018. But that's not going to show up at Social Security until he files his 2018 taxes, which will be in April of 2019.
Okay.
At that point, it'll be too late to make the adjustment for 2019. So it waits until January of the upcoming year, 2020, and he will then have to pay the Medicare premium.
Because I'm sure we lost half our listeners, if not more, with all of that. Let's walk people through with how this works. Let's assume Chris is right, and I believe he is. And when you send us emails, folks, the more info you put in, the better, and we don't have to guess. Chris is guessing he received and is will be taxable to him this 2017 lump sum payment he received in 2018. So that is going to appear on his 2018 taxes, folks. That was last year.
Yep.
Now he's probably filing his taxes this year and he's noticing everything.
Yep.
So that's the point, folks. He earns the money in 2018. This is how IRMA works. You earn the money in 2018, but when do you file your 2018 taxes? 2019. You file your 2018 taxes by April 15th of 2019. So he's probably sitting there doing his taxes and he realizes, holy moly, this 21 grand just pushed me up where I have to pay a surcharge on my Medicare premiums. And he's also saying, this isn't fair, because in 2019, this year, I am not going to make this $21,000, and I shouldn't have to pay a premium surcharge because I'm not making too much. But that's not how the law works, folks. So he earned the money in 2018, he does his taxes in 2019, and files them by April 15th of 2019. Social Security will get that information from the IRS. They will examine all tax returns of Social Security recipients in 2019, analyzing their 2018 taxes. They're going to realize he earned too much money in 2018. He was subject to premium surcharges, and they're going to enact those premium surcharges, not retroactively. They're going to enact them in 2020.
Correct, because they set your Medicare premiums for the year January.
Exactly. So you listener, are going to have to pay the surcharges beginning in January of 2020. Now he's saying, Chris, I'm not going to make as much money in 2019. When can I tell Social Security? You don't tell them anything.
Right.
They're going to check every single year.
Yep.
The problem is, because of that $21,000, you have to pay surcharges for the full year.
Yep.
Not only on your Medicare Part B premiums, but your Medicare Part D premiums. And I don't know if you are a single person or a married person. If you're a married person, both spouses, assuming your spouse is also on Medicare and you're filing jointly, will be hit with this premium surcharge. If you're single, you're going to be hit with a lesser premium. Well, you'll still be hit with a premium surcharge if you're single, but it's just one person paying it, not two, because you're only filing a single tax return. For the most part, if you're only, listen to the good news is, if you're only getting shot up one tier, there's five different tiers in IRMA. If you, oh, wait a minute, there's six now, I think, but I think
I'm
the six
right
one
the
doesn't take.
There's one, two, three, four, five.
Is there five?
There's
okay.
Still five.
Mm-hmm. If you're only being shot up one tier, it's probably going to cost you a little more than a grand
between
surcharges
both.
On B and D.
Right.
You're getting 21 grand. It's costing you an extra grand. You're still coming out ahead. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to look at it. Now, what'll happen is as long as your 2019 taxes or income remains below the IRMA limits, when you file your 2019 taxes in 2020, Social Security Administration will pick up on that and lower your 2021 premiums back down automatically. You don't have to get a hold of them.
Now, he might be asking this because he's heard it's possible to appeal.
It won't work for him.
No, but I want to point out, because people are saying, wait a minute, I've heard you can, if there's a one-time event, you can appeal it, and it's
true. Do
you
have the list of the one-time events?
I happen to have the list.
Excellent.
There are 8 life-changing events, they call them, that is, you're allowed to select one on the form, and this is form SSA-44, and this is all described right on there, in addition to the IRMA tiers and the extra premiums are all right on there. It's a nice little summary form. And the 8 reasons you can appeal where they will say, okay, even though we normally would have given you the IRMA, we're not going to because you have one of the 8 qualifying life-changing events that happened during that year. Marriage, divorce or an annulment, death of your spouse, a work stoppage, so you were laid off, a work reduction, which is similar, loss of income-producing property, like in a flood or something like that. Loss of pension income, like your pension failed or who knows what. Employer settlement payment, that it was due to you got a settlement for some reason and it's that payment that caused you to have the IRMA. There's no box for other. It's those 8 issues they will consider your appeal.
Yeah, he has no appeal.
He has none of those. No. The good news is there's a penalty for just 1 year. It's not like missing your the age 65 sign up period for Medicare and then paying a lifetime penalty, which is what you do there. But here you've got those 8 reasons, none of which you qualify under the story you were giving to us.
Yeah. So you have no choice but to pay that. And this is a good lesson for people who do take the retroactive benefits. I'm assuming his retroactive benefits were the 6-month retroactive benefits that he filed after his full retirement age and asked for his 6-month retroactive benefit. You do have to recognize if you're obviously on Medicare at that point, and that big lump sum retroactive benefit check will probably push you into a higher Medicare premium surcharge for that 1 year. It's just the cost of doing business, I guess, and getting that lump sum of retroactive benefit payment. But it also highlights, listeners, what happens when required minimum distributions begin. If 21 grand pushed him over the edge, and he's 66 right now, 67, if 21 grand pushed him over the edge, if he has a remotely reasonable IRA balance or 401k, IRA, 403b, TSP, whatever balances he has of about 800,000 or so, his RMD is going to be more than that 21,000. And he'll be faced with Medicare surcharges forever after RMDs. So you all need to be looking at what RMDs are going to do to you. And stop falling into this. And this, I know his question had nothing to do with RMDs, but I'm taking this like a bone in my mouth and I'm a dog and I'm running with it. That you have to start looking at your RMDs, Chris, and seeing not just, oh, I'm not going to do any conversions now because I'm in the same tax bracket now as I am going to be in retirement. Or, after required minimum distributions begin. There's no need for me to convert. Well, there might be if those conversions push you over
the
IRMA limit rules. Mm-hmm. Yes, if those required minimum distributions push you over those IRMA limits. Mm-hmm.
There's that. There's also RMDs will contribute to the taxability of Social Security income.
And capital gains.
So there's all kinds of these auxiliary taxes, right? We talked about that before when Jim was talking about using the phrase effective tax rate.
Exactly.
It's capturing in all of these side effects of your decision that people are so focused on just the income tax alone, they aren't taking into consideration all these auxiliary effects that you might experience This is where holistic planning comes in, holistic tax planning, holistic retirement planning. You got to look at the big picture, because sometimes you push on one side and something happens over here on the other side, and you got to consider both.
Absolutely. So you have to look at that not only when you take in retroactive benefits, but RMDs. RMDs, we call it the tax planning window between retirement and age 70 and a half. If you're not looking at that tax planning window, if you're not evaluating what are these required minimum distributions going to do, not just the marginal rate you're going to be in, but how are they going to tax my Social Security? How are they going to tax my capital gains? Are they going to subject my Medicare premiums to surcharges, my Medicare Part D premiums to surcharges? And you can call them a surcharge. It's a damn tax. Mm-hmm. Government calls them a surcharge. It's a tax. So you have to look at what this extra income is. And if 21 grand has pushed him over the edge, if he's married, that first premium level, that first tier level is at 170,000. Mm-hmm. If he's single, it's at 85,000. And if 21,000 has pushed him to one of those two limits, that means he's got a lot of money.
Other income. Yep.
And mm-hmm. it could mean that he has a good size IRA that is just a ticking tax time bomb that's going to nail them on income taxes, Medicare premium surcharges, taxation of Social Security benefits, and an increased taxation in capital gains.
Yep.
Okay. One more question, or are we done?
If we have a short one, but we've kind of pushed it.
Well, this one kind of ties into the same, so I want to go with it.
Okay, go ahead.
Because that has to do with Medicare.
Okay.
This comes from... no state.
Planet Earth.
Yeah, it comes from Earth. He sent it to us directly, that's why. If you send it through our website, it asks for your state. But if you just send me an email to jim@jimhelps.com, mm-hmm. we never ask for state. So he wrote to me, you and Chris, which I guess the you must be me, you and Chris might already know this, but I had missed it. I filed a restricted application for spousal benefits online about a week ago, reaching 66 in mid-March. Social Security called at noon today, on a Saturday, confirmed my details, and when asked, stated that my Part A benefit will start July 1st, 2018, because my application was filed in January 2019. I'll have you explain in a minute why they automatically gave him 6 months retroactive benefits. However, I had already made an HSA contribution via payroll deduction, thinking my Part A started 6 months earlier. So, in other words, he did this in January. So he thought he was okay in 2018. He didn't think he was in Part A. So now I have to fix an excess contribution made to my HSA or hopefully get my employer to fix it for me. It seems the more you know, the more you don't know. Before Chris gets into explaining what Social Security is doing, let me explain one slight thing with health savings accounts. If you are a participant in Medicare, if you are a participant in Medicare, you cannot contribute to an HSA. Rules are simple. If you're in Medicare, you cannot contribute to an HSA. So you have to be very, very careful when filing Social Security benefits. Because when you file for Social Security benefits and you are past the age of 65, he said he filed after his full retirement age, Chris, which is past the age of 65. When you file for Social Security past the age of 65, you are automatically enrolled in Part A. Automatically enrolled in Part A. Even if you are covered by an employer's health insurance plan. So you could still be working. And working for an employer with more than 20 people and working for an employer who has health insurance that's considered credible coverage for Medicare exemption. And now you reach your full retirement age, Chris. And you can start claiming Social Security now after your full retirement age and not be subject to the earnings test. So you're thinking, wow, great. I can start collecting Social Security. I'm still working. I am covered under my employer's plan. I'm not going to enroll in Medicare because it's an exempt health plan under my employer. I can continue putting money in my HSA. And what's happening behind the scenes, folks, is because you applied for Medicare after the age of 65, in this case, you're your full retirement age, 66 or 66 and a half, he or you will be automatically enrolled in Medicare Part A and may not even know it. I mean, they send
because
you a letter.
If you qualify for Social Security retirement benefits, you also, by default, because the requirements are even lower, qualify for Medicare Part A mm-hmm. with no premium. So
exactly.
I think the logic from the government side is it doesn't cost them anything anyway.
They're trying to be nice.
Why wouldn't they take it?
Exactly.
And this rule started way, 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 way before the introduction of HSAs, health
yep.
savings accounts.
Yep.
So this predates the HSA. Now, how old was he again when he went in and filed for Social Security? Did he say?
He reached 66 mid-March of last year.
Okay. That's why. Yep.
Yeah.
Did he say they're going to pay him his retroactive Social Security benefits as well? Or did he kind of, I think he was so appalled or shocked by the Medicare issue.
But I'm guessing that's what they did. So why don't you explain mm-hmm. what Social Security does when you go to file? He filed for spousal and they still did this for spousal. But they automatically gave him a retro. He could have simply denied the retro and none of this would have happened.
Right. So by default, Social Security's policy, this isn't a law or a rule, it's a policy that when you file for your benefits after reaching your full retirement age, they assume that you meant to file earlier. They assume that you just missed it, that you didn't realize you'd reached your full retirement age where there's no more penalty for claiming early, no more reduction, that you've now reached the point of receiving your full retirement age benefit. And now it's months later for him at about 9 months because he was March and he went all the way till January. Right? And although he said he's going to turn it on in March, right? He went in to claim in January. And,
he filed in January of this year.
And his benefits are about to start, so we're just in February here. He may have filed in time for them to get out that February payment, but probably not.
And Social Security called him on a Saturday and informed him on the Saturday that his Medicare began in July of 2018.
Right. And what that's related to is they assume that he meant to claim earlier, and they're allowed to backdate his application up to 6 months or back to his full retirement age month, which for him is in March of last year. So they couldn't push it all the way back to March, but they pushed it back 6 months to July, right, to halfway through the year, and said, we're going to be nice to you, and we're going to say, pretend like you came in 6 months ago when we're sure you meant to come in, but you just slipped your mind, and we're going to pay you as if you had filed then. We're going to pay you based on that date for your delayed retirement credits, so they're actually costing him 6 months worth of delayed retirement credits or 4% of his benefit he could get if he didn't do this, but they don't sometimes make it clear that's what they're doing. It depends on the person you're dealing with. Some will be nice and point it out to you and verify that's what you want to do. But that's the default. That's the and we only discovered this, well, it was a few years ago we discovered this because
we kept hearing
about people having this happen. We're like, well, why did you tell them to do that? And they was, well, we didn't tell them to do that. They just did it. And we confirmed that it is the policy for them to backdate the application, which would backdate both the Social Security
And
the
Medicare
Part A, even though he's not signing up for Medicare Part B. That Medicare Part A puts you then into the Medicare pool, eliminating your ability to contribute to an HSA at that point, all the way back to July of 2018.
Now, there's one thing to bear in mind, though. If something had happened to him health-wise that Medicare would have covered, they will cover it.
Retroactively.
Mm-hmm. So he needs to keep that in mind. And I don't know why they do this automatically. I'm dead against it. But you could theoretically do planning around that for people who don't know And they can say, well, gee, I'm going to backdate my Medicare because, gee, 4 months ago I had this condition. And if I had Medicare, they would have picked up 80% of the cost.
And my insurance isn't covering it very well or is giving me a bunch of flack. So I intended to delay my Social Security, but here's a way I can backdate and get it captured under there, and they'll cover it retroactively as if you had been covered at the time. That is a bit unique. Insurance doesn't normally work like that. So,
well, if they're going to backdate your Medicare, they have to cover you.
Correct. Yeah, if they're going to collect the premiums, which they are, from back to that date, you're effectively covered during those months.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way around this is to make it expressly clear on your application that you do not want retroactive benefits.
Yep.
We do want, you want your benefits to start as of, and for his instance, probably would have been February or March of 2019. And down in the notes box, actually spell that out in English in a sentence so that if they do it anyway, you can point to this and say, no, I clearly told you I didn't want to do this.
Now, and, could he not? Mm-hmm. He can withdraw his application and then reapply.
He could undo this if he wanted to.
And not have the IRMA limits.
Well, his issue wasn't with IRMA. It was HSA contribution.
Oh, well, I'm thinking of the IRMA guy, too, though. This ties into the IRMA guy. The IRMA guy's being nailed.
We don't know why the IRMA guy got retro. Yeah.
But this guy, never mind IRMA guy from the previous. I'm going down a rabbit hole. I shouldn't on that one. But for you, listener, on the HSA, here's what I would do. I would withdraw your application. Hell, you haven't even received a damn check yet. Just withdraw your application and then go reapply because you have 12 months to withdraw an application. Withdraw your application as if it never happened.
Right. And reapply without retroactive benefits.
Reapply without retro benefits. That won't backdate your Medicare anymore, and you can keep your money in the HSA.
And you might be early enough in the process. I don't know if you've received a benefit check yet, but you might be able to fix this without going through the pain and suffering of a full-blown
withdrawal.
But do
you know if you remove if an application, will they remove you from Part A as well?
I believe so. I believe it undoes it as if you never claimed.
Okay.
So they will undo
that would
everything.
Be, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I'm not sure.
Not 100% sure. That's
you
right.
You might want to get a hold of the Medicare Rights Center.
Mm-hmm.
That's MedicareRights.org. MedicareRights.org. It's all one word. And Chris, if you Google that, they'll give you their 800 number right on their website. Medicare Rights Center is a New York-based nonprofit who just honestly helps people understand Medicare. All their volunteers are unpaid. They don't work for insurance companies. They don't sell anything. But they understand Medicare inside and out. And for financial planners out there, go to MedicareRights.org. Look at their training program for CFPs. You can get what do we have to do there every 3 years?
Continuing education.
Thank you. Continuing education. I kept wanting to say delayed retirement credits. Yeah. I'm like, no, you're not getting delayed retirement credits. You're going to get continuing education, 16 hours to do their Medicare course. These people know Medicare inside and out, mm-hmm. and it's free. Now, CFPs, you got to pay several hundred dollars to do it.
Yeah.
But people, individuals, you can call them. So call them. Chris will get you their number in a minute. And if you call them, just explain to them the situation. Just say, hey, look, here's what happened. So do you know if I withdraw my Social Security application, I've got plenty of time to do that. If I withdraw my application and if you receive a check, you do have to give them that money back. So don't go blow that money. But withdraw your application, would that by default withdraw your Medicare application? Because it's as if you never filed Social Security. That's what they tell you. It's as if you never filed. Would that automatically remove you being put into Medicare and then allow you to reapply, not ask for the 6 months retro, and do your HSA contribution? Now, all that said, if you really like that 6 months retro and you like that extra check, then so be it. You're going to have to take the money out of the HSA.
Yeah, you'll have to balance
what's more important,
the need for rights.
Right, the extra money or the extra money in the HSA. Yeah. Now, one thing, listener, HSA contributions are prorated throughout the year. If you were ineligible because it was effective July 1st, you were in Medicare, you can only put 6 months' contribution that year in. Keep that in mind. You don't have to remove all your contribution, but you can't leave it all in. You can't say, oh, I made the whole contribution before July 1st. No. I did it in May. That doesn't matter. The government's going to say you enrolled in Medicare July 1st, so you were only allowed a 6 month contribution or half the amount.
Right. So the MedicareRights.org national helpline phone number is 800-333-4114. That's 800-333-4114. So they're available Monday through Friday. Says they're happy to answer questions about insurance choices, Medicare rights and protections, payment denials and appeals, complaints about care or treatment, Medicare bills, kind of the whole, everything regarding Medicare.
Anything Medicare.
And
it's a nonprofit. I hate the insurance agents who post, you know, call us for Medicare answers, and also they're going to try to do is sell you a Medigap or Medicare Advantage plan. These people sell nothing. They're a nonprofit, and they exist solely to help people understand the government bureaucracy called Medicare.
Right. Thanks for thinking of that. I forgot they were out there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that about wraps up this show. Hopefully people enjoyed it. Chris and I want to remind all our listeners, and we do want to apologize again to the caller who we could not take the call. Chris did not have the tech set up appropriately here in the office. Don't worry, I'm going to beat him senseless with a wet noodle after this. But we will contact that listener next week. Hopefully that listener will have their question available for us. But if anybody out there has a question you want answered on our show, just go to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Click on the Contact Us button and send us your question. Or email us directly, Jim at Jim Helps, or even Chris at Jim Helps.
Any or all of the above.
Right. And we also want to remind you that we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners here in the state of Colorado. If anything we ever talk about to you makes sense, if you're wondering, most of our listeners are do-it-yourselfers. Why else are you on iTunes listening to the Retirement and IRA show? We're not looking to manage your assets and get all this from you. Don't worry about that. You can continue managing your assets. You can continue navigating your family on your financial trajectory. But if you want an independent opinion, am I on track for retirement? What is my future RMDs going to look like? How are they going to affect my IRMA Medicare premium surcharges and my Social Security taxation? Should I be considering Roth conversions? Do I have a tax planning window? Can I retire? Hey, I wrote this wonderful spreadsheet. I'm crunching all these numbers. It looks like I can retire, but God, I kind of like an impartial third set of eyes looking at this. If you want that type of relationship, you might want to consider calling us for what we call a coffee and a second opinion. And it's going to give us a chance to chat with you, see if our firm would be a good fit. If so, we'll explain how. If we don't feel our firm would be a good fit, we'll explain why. And hopefully point you in the direction of a company or an individual who could help you better.
Perfect. So thanks, everyone, for listening, especially on this show. Went a little bit long for the Q&A show, but thought we hit some interesting topics today. So we'll be back with you next week, hopefully with a live caller. We'll see how that goes. We'll reach out to that person and see what they wanted. If they can wait till next week, we'll try to handle that question live on the air. But we'll be here every Tuesday afternoon, typically about this same time, about between 3 and 4 or 4:30 p.m. Mountain Time on Tuesdays is our typical broadcast schedule now. You can always pick us up on iTunes or other podcast software later than that, as these post usually about 10 days after we record them. But we really appreciate you listening, and we'll be back with you next week with another show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.